الحمد لله وكفى، والسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى. أما بعد، فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. والذين جاهدوا فينا لنهدينهم سبلنا. سبحان ربك رب العزة عما يصفون، والسلام على المرسلين، والحمد لله رب العالمين. اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. Last week we spoke about one of the important preconditions to taking benefits from opportunities. More specifically, we used the example of taking benefit from the Holy Quran, which very, very explicitly is the ultimate source of benefit for mankind. And what's interesting is that when a person wants to approach this ultimate, amazing, magnificent source of guidance and inspiration, there is precondition that has to be met. Actually, there's a series of preconditions, but I'm going to summarize it. There's a precondition that has to be met. And that precondition is that a person must remove that which is harmful before taking advantage of something so beneficial. Again, a person must remove that which is negative and harmful before taking advantage of something that is so beneficial. For example, I could think in my mind right now that I would like to engage with the Holy Quran and take advantage of all of its magnificence. And that opportunity is available to me. I can go and I can pick up the Quran and I can begin to recite it. However, before I do that, I must ensure that I am in a state of purity. That's the ultimate precondition that's going to come upon me. And if I can and am able to attain a state of purity, I pursue that purity, and then and only then do I engage with the Quran. Because despite the opportunity that the Quran presents to me, and all of the amazing things that happens when a person engages with that Quran, in order to take benefit from that, I must remove the negative that could potentially preclude me from taking advantage of that opportunity. And in this particular instance, that negative would be impurity. So otherwise stated, impurity must be removed before a person can take advantage of that which is going to be beneficial. The Quran just, you know, provides that example for us. Taking it one step further, even after I attain a state of purity, so I've attained a state of purity, I now have the, you know, this window of opportunity to be able to engage with the Quran, even after I attain that state of purity, before I even begin the recitation of the Quran, I first seek protection with Allah from the effects of shaitan. Right? That's the first thing that we recite. أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ. Now, you would think, why do I have to recite that? I just went, I made wudu, I attained a state of purity, I maximized on my opportunity, I removed that which is negative, I'm ready to go. I'm good to go. I'm totally focused on Allah. This is not some opportunity where I'm sitting and thinking about, you know, evil or ill or negative. But, despite the fact that I'm ready to go, and despite the fact that I'm about to engage with that ultimate source of guidance, I am still told, actually I'm commanded by the Qur'an, that I must seek protection with Allah from shaitan before I begin to take advantage of all of the great words of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So this is a highlighting for us, you know, I was sharing this last week, this was the topic of the talk last week, that I was reading one of the tafsir, and in this tafsir they mentioned that, the author mentioned that, this is one of the wisdoms of reading A'udhu Billahi Minash Shaitanir Rajeem before engaging with the Qur'an. Because the one thing that could distract me from my effort, my intention, from my commitment, let's put it that way, from my commitment, the one thing that could distract me from my commitment is the whisperings of shaitan. Even in such an amazing opportunity, even after I've attained a state of purity, even after I've made wudu, even though I'm doing it only for the sake of Allah and to seek His guidance and pleasure, I still always need to keep in the back of my head the possibility that of the negativity that shaitan can bring into that interaction, and I must essentially, you know, I must detonate a repellent. You can think of it that way. When a person says, A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim, they're essentially just detonating a repellent that just spreads far and wide and pushes away the effects of shaitan, creating an absolutely pure ground upon which an engagement with the Qur'an can occur. So this is an example of something that we do so often because we even do this in our prayer. But it is a general principle that we need to appreciate that is going to allow us to be able to take advantage of so many other things and protect us from so many other difficulties. Just as another example, and I don't want to belabor this point too long, but just as another example, one of the things that you'll come to appreciate if you spend time in the company of people who train others spiritually is that they place a huge premium on people making tawbah before they begin their spiritual journey. And then even throughout the spiritual journey, but particularly at the time when they begin their spiritual journey. One of the things that, you know, like as a person would matriculate at a university or at a college or even at a high school in order to be able to attain an education, often you have students of the spiritual path who will matriculate, quote unquote, with a teacher. So essentially they make a commitment to the teacher makes a commitment back to them, both are engaged in a process of trying to advance one another. But one of the key things that occurs at the time of that commitment is a statement by the student, the teacher reminding the student to make statements to seek forgiveness from Allah, to make tawbah. Essentially they call it tawbah. In fact, historically, one of the names of the paths of spiritual development, now you know the paths of spiritual development have different names depending on the time and place, but one of the names of this of the paths of spiritual development as a whole was just tawbah. They would just call it tawbah. And the reason that this is such an essential principle of spiritual development is because before we can even consider building ourselves spiritually, the first step is to make tawbah and remove all the stuff from before. The first step is to make tawbah and remove all of the stuff from before. Because once the negative is gone, then it becomes much easier to build the positive. It's similar to, you know, construction in this world. When you want to build a magnificent building, and you go to any engineer, and you say, there's a structure currently there, what should I do? They'll tell you to tear it down. They'll say, tear it down, remove the foundations, start over. You don't want to build on yesterday's structure. You want to create a new structure which will allow you to build tomorrow's building. That's the whole point. If you like the structure that's there, then keep the building. But if you're going to build a new building, remove the whole thing, including the foundation, and start over. So this is something that we appreciate throughout our engagements with the world, whether they be, you know, dunyawi or dini, whether they be worldly or they be religious. It's a general principle. And why this is important, and one thing that we should appreciate, is that We are a people that pay a huge premium to keep purity, to keep things pure, because we know that purity keeps the general environment positive, and a generally positive environment allows for progress. So, for example, we try to stay in a state of wudu. We try to stay in a state of wudu. Now, if you ask me legally, you know, legally, can you tell me when do I have to have wudu? Do you have to have wudu when you go to work? No. Do you have to have wudu for most of the day? No. Do you have to have wudu before you go to bed? No. Do you need to make wudu first thing when you get up in the morning? Not unless you're about to pray. Wudu is really only technically required when a person is going to engage themselves in the beneficial act of prayer, which again is a highlighting principle that the purity that's achieved by wudu is necessary before we can take benefit from prayer. So it kind of highlights that same principle. And it's also necessary when a person's going to recite Quran. And if you so happen, it might be necessary if you're about to make tawaf. So these are the times that wudu might be necessary. Just off the top of my head. I might have missed one or two examples, but off the top of my head. But we also know that it is sunnah to maintain a state of wudu. Not saying it's necessary, it's sunnah to maintain a state of wudu. Why? Because when a person is in a state of wudu, they're in a state of purity. And when they're in a state of purity, there's going to be a high likelihood of positive interaction. The environment will be much more difficult for Shaitan and any other evil influence to penetrate that environment. So generally speaking, any student of deen who desires to progress in deen, any person who's trying to build a positive home, any person who's trying to achieve blessings in their life, a general principle is to maintain a state of wudu. Now, you know, one of the funny things is, even to the extent that it's sunnah to make wudu before, to be in a state of wudu when a person sleeps. Now you might think, that is so, it doesn't make any sense, it's so unreasonable. Why? Because we know that sleep itself breaks wudu. The sleep that I'm about to engage in is actually going to break my wudu. So why would a person in their right mind, 4 minutes before they're going to go to bed, or 5 minutes before they're going to go to bed, go and make an effort to do something that's going to break 5 minutes later? Isn't that totally nonsensical? Yes, it might be nonsensical if you look at it superficially and ask the question, okay, what am I about to do? But when you understand the spiritual ramifications of what is happening, then you begin to realize that, okay, wait a minute, when I make wudu, I'm purifying myself. I'm attaining a state of purity. I'm pushing away the impure. And I'm about to go to sleep. And although sleep appears to be a passive process, it's actually a highly dynamic and active process in which I'm going to grow and develop further. Because there's blessings in sleep. And there's barakah in sleep. And beyond this, there's also some various narrations that talk about some of the rewards of the person who passes away in their sleep after having made a state of wudu, or after having made wudu. So we understand as a general principle, and I can give many examples of this, but we understand as a general principle that there is a high premium on purity in our deen. And that high premium on purity is a physical purity, a metaphysical purity, a spiritual purity, a purity of the heart, a purity of the mind. We're very particular about our purity. And we even know that purity is a half of our faith. But what does that mean? It means that when you look at the broad picture, you begin to realize that many of the issues that are related to our deen are, in essence, really boiling down to purity. When I guard my gaze, what am I really doing? I'm maintaining the purity of my heart. I'm maintaining the purity of my thoughts. I'm maintaining the purity of my mind. When I guard my ears, I'm maintaining the purity of my heart. I'm maintaining the purity of my mind. Because what comes in these ears is going to enter into the heart, and the heart's going to fall in love with that, whether it's good or bad. And what goes into my mind is going to penetrate my thoughts, and the mind is going to think about that, whether that's good or bad. So when we say attain purity of the heart, you know, a person doesn't just take their heart, wash it, and everything becomes pure. Yes, there are ways to cleanse the heart, and dhikr is one of them, and there are other acts that we can do to cleanse the heart. But what we have to remember is that one of the ways by One of the ways by which we keep the heart pure is by maintaining the purity of the pathways that lead to the heart, being such as the gaze, such as the hearing, such as the mind and the interaction that it has with the heart, which is a little more complex than what we can discuss in these few minutes that we have together. But generally speaking, we are always looking for purity. And it's such a dominant principle in our deen that I can tell you that if we just take this big principle home, that purity is half of my faith, that will take us very, very far. You don't need to read big, complicated books to understand the deen. Yes, there are some subtleties and nuances that are present in those books, which our scholars are able to elucidate and share with us in many different ways, and we're forever grateful for that. But in the end, even the most complicated matters in our deen seem to boil down to just very, very simple principles, which we should all be able to inculcate. And one of those is the importance of purity. One of those is the global importance of purity. Purity, the physical purity that we attain, the spiritual purity that we attain, the purity of the environment that we try to attain, the purity of our thoughts and heart that we're always seeking to attain. And remember that it's in that context that it becomes very easy to plant the love of Allah, the appreciation of Allah, and the passion to be able to advance in deen. You know, I could even say it this way. Deen essent, you know, the first step into deen is purity. Because when a person steps into deen, how do they step into deen? They recite the shahada. La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. And what is La ilaha illallah? La ilaha illallah is a ultimate purifier in which I purify my heart of anything that could potentially be worshipped except Allah. That's purity. That's the ultimate step of purity. The shahada is the ultimate purification which purifies an individual from kufr, which is the most vile type of impurity. But the first step is purity, and every step along the way is purity. So much of the essence of this path is purity of the way of our deen. So, you know, last week I'm just building on, and I'm actually going to carry this in for one more week. I have one or two more principles to make, but again, I don't want to make this exceedingly lengthy at this point. But generally speaking, we put a huge premium on purity. And so much of the deen can be distilled down to purity. Even when we get to, you know, various fatawa, can I do this and should I do that and is it okay to do this? It really often comes down to just purity. You know, is this pure? Now, of course, the deen has much more of a detailed response to many of those circumstances, but you'll often look at those and say, wait a minute, this is just not even pure. So why am I even asking the question? If I am a person who values purity, I won't even need to ask that question. And we, as a people who are striving, should know that purity is not this notion, this broader notion of purity. This broader notion of purity is not selectively expressed. It's constitutive. Selectively expressed means we can't just like turn purity on and off. Like now I'm going to be pure, but then I'm going to swear and I'm going to speak vile, you know, and then I can still try to remain pure. It doesn't work that way. It's constitutive. We seek purity in one thing, and that leads to questioning how we seek purity in the next. And then we seek purity in the next thing, and that leads us to pursue purity in the next. So it doesn't match that a person wants to be seeking deen, but is using vile words with their tongue. It doesn't match that a person wants to be seeking deen, but just has complete filth coming from their tongue. And, you know, sometimes we think, okay, well, in the masjid, I can act like I'm Mr. Pure, but then when I'm back at my home, you know, I'm Mr. Impure. I'm spewing off words that no one would even be able to imagine that I would ever use. But all of a sudden, I'm with my friends, so I can talk differently. But it doesn't work that way. You can't take advantage of purity, and you can't maintain purity unless you seek purity as a vector throughout all of your throughout all of our existence. And one thing leads to the other. Today, I seek purity in my engagement with the Quran. And by seeking purity in my engagement with the Quran, I begin to appreciate the benefits of purity. And by appreciating the benefits of purity, I then seek to be pure physically by cleansing myself after using the restroom or making wudu as much as I can to maintain a state of wudu. Not wudu upon wudu, you know, for no reason, but maintaining a general state of wudu. Wudu independently is not an act of worship. It is an act of worship that's predicated on something else. So I can't just make wudu upon wudu upon wudu as an act of worship. But I can make wudu for each prayer, for example. But anyway, the point that's being made here is that it's one thing that leads to the next. And then it becomes my responsibility to scan where can I continue to improve and create additional purity. My tongue should be pure. Never should a vile word exit from the tongue. Now, I know there are circumstances where people get pushed to extremes and may say things that they didn't mean to say, but for the most part, a person should not be spewing off vile language with their tongue because it just creates an impure environment and it's impure for the tongue. Similarly, a person who begins to slowly build on this purity will begin to also ask for purity in their manners and in their etiquette and in the way in which they behave with one another. You know, to speak loudly with one another, to speak in an insulting manner with one another, to break someone's heart. These are not acts of the person who seeks purity. These are impure manners, impure characteristics. These are not the acts of a person who is seeking purity. And we know that in the end, we have to present ourselves to Allah, and Allah only accepts that which is pure. Allah only accepts that which is pure. Look, I mean, I want to pray. I can't pray unless I'm pure. I want to engage with the Quran. I can't engage with the Quran unless I'm pure. I want to make tawaf of the house of Allah. I cannot make tawaf of the house of Allah unless I'm pure. Every time I want to engage with Allah in these different ways, which are just the pinnacles and hallmarks of our deen, I'm always asked a simple question before I'm let in the door. Are you pure? Are you pure? And that's the same question that's going to be asked on the Day of Judgment in its own way. Are you pure? Or do we need to go and spend time in Jahannam in order to attain that purity? Look, in the end, to enter that gate of Jannah, when we're standing there on the Day of Judgment, it's going to boil down to, am I pure? Do I have a pure book of deeds? Do I have a pure heart? Do I have love for Allah? Am I pure of pride? Etc., etc., etc. And the only way I can get into Jannah is if I have that purity and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala somehow showers His mercy upon me. And if not, I go to Jahannam for some time. But what's going to happen in Jahannam? I'll become pure. It's another way to become pure. And eventually, when the filth or pride or the negative is purified from me and my book of deeds and my heart and my actions, then and only then will I be allowed to enter into the magnificent bounty of Allah, which is called Jannah. I still need purity. Now that's the lesson that we have at every engagement, you know, every step along the way. I'm not saying it's every single thing is predicated upon it, but so many of the major milestones of our deen are predicated upon this. And so we are generally, we should appreciate this global principle of our deen, that we are always seeking to be pure. And we want to create an environment that is pure. And we want to be pure. And we want to take every advantage that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has provided us in order to maintain that purity. So this is a broad principle of our deen. I spoke about it last week in the very introduction to this topic, which essentially was an understanding of the purity of environment that's achieved by saying أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ before recitation of the Qur'an. And now we've carried that over into just a general theme concerning purity. And then next week, inshallah, we have one more point that I'd like to make, and then we'll hopefully be able to move on to another topic. Wa akhiru da'wana anil hamdulillahi rabbil alamin.